We're doing a quick review of what we've seen the last few weeks. So, being that we have new students, we're going to begin at the beginning. God created the world 6 days. On the seventh day was Sabbath. God rested. We have 10 generations from Adam to Noah. Noah, there's a flood. The world destroyed. Noah has 3 children. Shem, Ham, and Yefes. We have 10 generations. We reach Avram, 1948. Avram is born. 2448. Avram has his first child, Yitzchak, right? No. Good. Someone's awake. Very good. 2048. Avram has a child, Yitzchak. 400 years later. 2448. 400 years later. 400 years from 248 when Yitzchak was born. The Jews leave Egypt under the guidance of Moshe. We have the splitting of the Red Sea. We enter the desert. We're in the desert for 40 years till the year 2488 when we enter the land of Israel after Moshe passes away and our leader is Yehoshua. Right? Yehoshua leads the Jewish people into the land of Israel, spends 7 years conquering the land of Israel, 7 years dividing the land of Israel, and then passes away. We are left under the guidance of the judges. We've moved from Yehoshua to the elders who pass away a year after his death because they didn't eulogize him properly. So God had them pass away within a year after his death. And then we enter the period of the judges. Who is our first judge? Othniel ben Kenaz. We have the period of the judges a few hundred years. We don't have a set king. Every time the Jews sin, they get conquered by another nation. God sends us a judge. He teaches us. We repent. We remove the yoke of the foreign nations. And this goes on and on until we reach Shmuel, Samuel. Samuel is the prophet who was born to Hannah, a woman who was barren, who prayed to God and finally was blessed with a child named Shmuel. Samuel is an offspring of Korach. Korach foresaw with prophecy that he would have such a great, great, great offspring as Samuel. Samuel is equated to Moshe and Aaron, as we say every Shabbos. Moshe v'Aaron b'Chohanav u'Shmuel b'Korei Shmo. So Samuel is a great prophet who led the Jewish people, guided the Jewish people, and when he got old, the Jewish people told him, we don't want this situation where there's no consistency, continuum, we want a dynasty, we want a king. And then they err and sin in asking for a king, which deserves its own discussion, and Samuel tells them he will give them their king, and finally their king is appointed King Saul, the first king of the Jewish people, from the tribe of Benjamin.
King
Shaul, Saul. So, Shaul is our first king. Shaul has a son-in-law named David. And Shaul sins in his kingdom and is foretold that the kingdom is going to be taken from him and ultimately given to his friend who is better than him, none other than the one who turns out to be his son-in-law, David. David takes the throne after a few years of Shaul chasing him and trying to wipe him out. And initially the Jewish people don't accept him as king. Initially, the Jewish people follow Shaul's son, Ishbosheth. And finally, after Ishbosheth is assassinated, the kingdom is united. Everyone accepts David as king. David leads us to war against the Philistines. He is the first leader from the time of Samson, the judge. A few hundred years have passed. 100 and some odd years have passed. He is the first judge who removes the yoke of the Philistines from upon us and takes them on and destroys them. What? Since Samson, correct.
Samson did not remove the yoke.
Samson did not. I mean, since Samson's period. In Samson's period, we were subservient to the Philistines, and we did not remove them till King David. David has a few nephews. David's nephews are Yoav, the son of his sister Tsruya, and Yoav's brother Avishai, and Amasa, the son of Yeser, his brother-in-law, and his sister Abigail. Now, David is king. We had seen that when the Jewish people were out fighting a war, David HaMelech had spoken before God and he had said, just as there were foundations and principles within Judaism and strengths that were implanted within the Jewish people by each of the forefathers, I'm implanting within the Jewish people the strength of kingship. And David requested that that strength be a part of the Shemona Esrei. Just as we say, Elokei Avram, Elokei Yitzchak, Elokei Yaakov, we should include Elokei David in our Shemona Esrei. And God said, well, the forefathers were tested and you were not. And David says, well, test me. And God says, well, I will test you and I will tell you in what I will test you, what I didn't do to the forefathers, and I will tell you in advance that you will not live up to the test. And so David errs and asks for a test. And he is going on his rooftop one evening, and he sees a bird, he tries to shoot the bird, the arrow pierces through a curtain, and he beholds a beautiful girl bathing, Bathsheba, the daughter of Eliam, the granddaughter of Achitophel, the wife of Uriah Achiti, who is one of David's great warriors, who is out at war, and upon leaving for war has left his wife with a get, divorce contract. And David HaMelech calls her, he is overtaken, and David HaMelech lives with her. And that is the beginning of the chapters.
How are you shattered or something like that?
One understanding is that she was surrounded with a mechitza of pottery, and the Satan came. God told him, I'm going to test you. So the Satan came in the form of a bird, and when he tried to shoot the bird, the arrow broke the earthenware, the thin earthenware veiling that was protecting her from being seen. She sends word to King David, I'm pregnant. David sends word to call her husband back from the front lines. Her husband rebels against King David and is put to death, and ultimately King David marries her. The prophet Nathan comes before David and tells him, David, there was a wealthy person, he had many, many animals, there was a poor person, he had one sheep, the sheep would sleep with him, would warm him, he'd get covering from the sheep's wool, he'd drink the sheep's milk, and then this wealthy person had a guest come to him and he didn't want to take from his own animals, so he took the sheep of the pauper, and he slaughtered it and gave it to his guest. And David HaMelech said that person should pay five times for the sheep, and he should get killed. Four times for the sheep, I'm sorry. And he should get killed. And Nathan, the prophet, tells him, you are the person. God gave you so many precious things, and you took Uriah's wife, and you had Uriah killed. And God says, now I will arise from within your home, evil, bad, and your women will be taken from before your eyes, and your women will be taken forcibly. Everyone's going to see it. You did it in hiding, and God is going to reveal and pay you back. And David right away confesses and says, I have sinned. This is the sign of David, his ability to recognize his error and try to make up for it right away. And so David right away admits, he says, I have sinned. And Nathan tells him, yes, and Hashem is going to forgive you. You are not going to die, but because of the Chilul Hashem, the child that was just born is going to die. And now we have followed through what we have seen the last few weeks. We have followed through the prophecies coming true. We had seen how one after another David HaMelech suffered these punishments. And the first thing we saw was that that child that Bathsheba bore from that time that they were together became ill. And David HaMelech prayed and David HaMelech fasted and David HaMelech would lie on the ground. And the elders tried to beg him to come and eat and he wouldn't. And after 7 days the child died and the servants were fearful to tell David that the child had died. They said when the kid was alive, he went to such extreme measures praying for the child. Who knows what's going to happen, what he'll do when he hears the child die. The king, David, sees the elders whispering, he sees his servants talking, and he tells them, has the child died? And they tell him, yes, he has died. So David gets up, he washes himself, he anoints himself, he wears new clothing, he goes to the temple, he bows before Hashem, and he comes back home and asks them to give him a meal. So they ask him, what's going on? When the kid was alive, you were mourning, fasting, everything, now the kid's dead. So he says, yeah, so long as he was alive, I said, maybe God will forgive me, maybe the kid will live. Now that he's dead, what do I have to fast for? It's over. Can I bring him back? I'm going to him, he's not coming back to me. David HaMelech has an issue with his wife, but Bathsheba says, look what you did! Because of you, the kid died, I'm leaving. And David says, stay. And she says, no. And he says, yes. And she says, no. So David HaMelech begs her, and she says, why should we continue? You see, God doesn't want this union, and our children are all going to die. Why should we continue? So David tells her, she's a little girl, she's all 7, but she's had enough. So David tells her, I promise you that God has approved that we should remain married, and that the next child is supposed to be the king who takes my throne. And he gives her this promise, and they continue living together. She has another child, he names him Shlomo, Solomon, and God has a special affinity for this child. And God sends word with Nathan the prophet that God calls him Yedidya, friend of God. And we discussed our sages' deep interpretations as to what happened in the story. And we discussed that one of the things that prove, that give great support to Chazal's understanding of the story is the fact that God does approve of this relationship continuing. God does approve of the next child and God calls him friend of God and he has appointed the king who takes David's place. David has a wife that he captured at war, and That wife was exceptionally good looking. She bore him a son named Avshalom. After he captured her, she became pregnant from him before she became a Gioris, as the Torah permits him to do. And she had a child named Tamar, who is also exceptionally good looking. And now we are on to the second thing that's going to happen to David HaMelech. His son Amnon is exceptionally attracted to his half-sister, and halachically she's not really his sister, because her mother became pregnant with her before she became Jewish, and Amnon wants her very, very badly, and he becomes ill, and his cousin advises him, make believe you're sick, and the king will come visit you and ask for your sister to come and serve you and help you get better. And Amnon lies and he does that, and when David comes to visit his son Amnon, he begs him to send his sister in, and David sends word that Tamar, his daughter, should go and help her brother get better, feed him. And Tamar comes to his house, and as she's making the food, Amnon sends everyone out and he takes her forcibly. She begs him, don't. She says, halachically we could get married, let's do it the proper way, the way Jews do it. You're going to shame me, what's going to happen? And he's not willing to listen to her. He forces her, and then he hates her afterwards. She castrates him afterwards. And he hates her more than he ever loved her, and he kicks her out and locks the door behind her. She tears her clothing and she goes out wailing. And her brother Avshalom tells her, did Amnon do to you what I think he did? Now be quiet, he's your brother, we'll take care of him. He takes her into his house, and Avshalom waits 2 years until he avenges his sister's shame. David is silent when all of this happens. But David is not completely silent. Until this point, we had the biblical prohibition that a man may not be mityached, a man may not be alone in a room with an erva, a woman who is forbidden to marry. Meaning a man may not be alone with his aunt, a man may not be alone with any married woman. There's a special permission that the Torah allows us to be alone with our mothers, with our daughters, with our sisters. And even that, a person is not allowed to dorm with his sister. He's not allowed to have a long-term situation where he's alone with his sister. He's allowed to be alone with his sister on a short-term basis. She wants to spend the night in his house or something like that. Yeah. No. So biblically, we are forbidden to have yichud with Gemara and Kiddushin. He asked me for the source, Daf Pei Amud Beis, Tur, in Evin Ezer, Siman Chaf Beis. You asked me. No. I was in the process of writing an email. That's why I remember it. I looked it up this Shabbos. So I don't remember that music, but he asked me this a while ago for the source for this, so that's the source. So until this point, it was biblically prohibited for a man to have yichud with a woman that's biblically prohibited to him, a married woman or something else that's biblically prohibited.
How could David Melech allow his sister?
This sister was not biblically prohibited to be with him. And anyways, when she came to the house, there was no yichud. There were other people there. Amnon kicked everyone out after she came in. When David sent her, he sent her to a house where there were other people present. And now, as a result of this, Tamar said, if this is what happens with me, I was such a tznua, certainly this could happen with other people. If this is what happens with me, I'm the daughter of a king, certainly this could happen with other people. And she pushes forward a rabbinic institution that forbids us to have yichud, even with a woman who we are permitted to marry. And that's the halacha today, that one may not be alone with a girl that's single, a girl that he might end up marrying. Even that, one is forbidden to be alone with her, and that was instituted here as a result of this story. 2 years later, so David HaMelech got the second punishment. He said that the person's going to pay 4 times for the sheep. God said he's going to pay 4 times. So the first thing was the child died. The second thing was what happened to his daughter. And now the third thing, Avshalom has a party when they're shearing his sheep, and he begs the king to come with him and his servants, and the king says, no, it's toilsome, we don't want to do it. So he says, okay, so send my brothers with me. So the king sends word that Amnon should join him, and when Amnon comes, Avshalom has his lads ready, that when Amnon is good and drunk, they should kill him. And that's what happens. They're all feasting over there, and Amnon has his lads has his lads assassinate Amnon, and then all the other children, all of David's other children are running. They don't know, maybe Avshalom wants to kill everyone out. David hears word that Avshalom killed all his sons, and he tears his clothing, and they all mourn. And then this cousin who gave Amnon this bad advice, Yonadab, he tells David, he tells him, no, I'm sure Avshalom didn't kill all your other sons. He must have just killed Amnon. Because, you know, ever since Amnon did what he did to Avshalom's sister, to Tamar, he's had it in for him. Don't worry, it's only Amnon that's dead. Notice, this was his friend who gave him the advice, who got him to do it. When he's dead, he says, it's only Amnon, don't worry about it. So Avshalom is scared for his life. He just killed the king's son. So he runs to his grandfather. Remember, his mother was a non-Jewish woman from Geshur. So he runs to his grandfather, the non-Jewish king Talmai, the king of Geshur, and he spends 2 years there. And 3 years there, I'm sorry. Time has passed, and David HaMelech misses his son Avshalom. Avshalom was next in line. Avshalom was the next child. Amnon was the eldest. After Amnon was killed, Avshalom was next in line to inherit the throne. As far as Avshalom thought, at least, and possibly on many fronts, Avshalom was really the next heir to the throne. Now, Yoav knew that David really wanted to make up with Avshalom, but that David had this internal conflict. Am I being fair? Am I not being fair? If I'm too compassionate to Avshalom, that's not fair. If I'm not compassionate to Avshalom, that's not fair. I have to take into account that he murdered his brother. I have to take into account that there aren't witnesses. There was no warning. We don't know who did it. It was the servants that did it. So David has this internal conflict, and Yoav knows he has to help his uncle, the king, David, figure out what to do. So he sends to Tekoa, where there are wise people, because they have olive oil growing, they have good olives growing there, and they eat a lot of olive oil, which makes a person smart. And he calls a smart woman in from there, and he tells her, wear clothing as though you've been in mourning, and come as though you've been mourning over a dead man before the king. And he tells her what to tell the king. She comes and she wails before the king, save me, the king. He asks her, what do you want? She says, I am an almana. My husband died. I have two children. They were fighting in the field. No one could intervene, and one killed the other. And now the rest of the family get together, and they all want to kill the murderer. And I'll tell you the truth. All they want is to ensure that my husband has no inheritors, so they inherit his wealth. There are no witnesses. No one really saw what happened. We know he killed him, but no one really caught it, and there's no halachic basis for killing the brother. And all they want is to ensure that there's no inheritor. So the king says, go home. I'll command my men to protect you. And the woman says, you know, if my son gets killed, it'll all be my fault, because you said you'd help me. But bottom line, you know, I'm worried what's going to be with my kid. So the king says, if anyone dares say anything to you, you bring him to me, and I'll ensure he doesn't touch you. So she says, don't you remember, my master, the king, remember the Torah tells us that when a person has to run to the city of refuge for protection, so then the Torah says, make sure that they're close by. Divide them throughout the land of Israel so they're easily accessible. So I don't want a situation. You're telling me I should come to you. By the time I come to you, they'll kill my kid. So the king promises, I swear that no hair should fall from your son's head. And by making this promise, he's telling her, it'll become famous that I made this promise. And if anyone dares touch your kid, they'll know they're messing with me. So the woman says, you know, can I ask you one more thing? He says, okay. So she says, why do you think such a thing would happen within the Jewish people? You really think Jews would behave this way? Don't you realize you're talking as though you're blaming yourself, that you're not willing to take in your son who they say killed his brother? Ultimately, what's left to life? We die, and it's like water that's poured on the ground. We can't take it back. So the king tells her, tell me, who put you up to this? Tell me the truth. It must be Yoav. So she says, you know what, you're smart. You're like an angel. You know, it's true. Yoav put me up to this. So the king says, you know what, fine, I'm gonna do what he wants. I'll bring Avshalom back. He proved it to me when I had to rule in a case that was similar to the case of my two sons. I ruled that we have to protect the son, even though he's the murderer, being that we don't have witnesses, we don't have testimony, we don't have sufficient proof. We do have to protect the other son. By the same token, my son deserves the same protection. So by giving him this case before him, David was able to see the truth. And then David tells Yoav, okay, send word, bring Avshalom back from Geshur, I won't harm him. Avshalom comes back, and David says, send him home, I don't want to see him. So Avshalom goes back home, and after 2 years pass, David isn't willing to see him. He did kill his other son. So Avshalom gets upset. He sends word to Yoav, and he says, get me to see my father. And Yoav refuses to come. So he sends word again, and again Yoav refuses to come. So he tells the servants, you see Yoav's, he has his grain, his barley next to my crops. Go burn it down. So they burn Avshalom's, they burn Yoav's barley. Yoav comes storming in, says, what'd you burn my barley for? So he says, I asked you to come. You didn't come. tell me, what did I come back to Israel for if the king is going to treat me this way? So let me come see the king. If he has a claim against me, if he feels I'm deserving of death, let him kill me. So Yoav tells the king how upset Avshalom is, how much he wants to come before him. He comes before the king, he bows before him, the king kisses him, and it seems like everything is made up. Now, Avshalom is an extremely handsome person. He was a Nazir Olam. He was a Nazir for his whole life. Once a year he'd shave his head, and the hair would grow, and it was so beautiful that he would get 200 coins. Was the weight and value of his hair. He'd get so much money for the hair, which was exceptional. He was given godly hair. He had three sons and one daughter who he named Tamar, and they died in his lifetime, because we have a tradition that if someone burns someone else's source of sustenance, like Avshalom burned Yoav's crops, then he won't leave behind an inheritor. Now Avshalom wants to take the throne. Huh?
I didn't understand about the...
If someone burns someone else's source of food, someone like Avshalom had his servants burn Yoav crop, so then God decrees that that person won't leave behind the Yoresh, an inheritor. And that's why Avshalom, by the time he died, he has no one left behind. Avshalom knows that he'll have no one left behind, so he builds a monument called Yad Avshalom. Someone, Shai, Diamond, you guys remember him from England? He just sent me an email, he did some research. They claim that Yad Avshalom is on Har HaZeisim. That's what his research bore. Back to the Navi, we're holding Perek Tesvav. Avshalom wants to become king, so he starts taking on heirs. He starts having 50 people running before him wherever he goes. He'd come early in the morning, and when people would be judged by David, he'd call them and he'd ask him, "Hey brother, where are you from?" He'd be friendly to them, he was a good politician. He'd ask them what their case was, and then he'd ask him how the king judged them, and he'd say, "Boy, if I were in charge, I'd do things better." And the person would try to kiss him, and he'd say, "No, we're brothers." He'd treat him like an equal, of course. He's being a good politician. Slowly he's causing the people to feel like David isn't treating them fairly. He's giving them some undercurrents of enmity. He's telling them that David's maybe treating them differently because they're from a different tribe, and he's saying, "I would treat everyone the same." Now, years pass, and we're holding when David is 67 years old. This is 3 years before David's demise. David is going to live to the ripe old age of 70. Now, when David is 67 years old, Avshalom is next in line to take the throne. And Avshalom doesn't want to wait, because Avshalom feels like his father isn't going to give him the throne. So Avshalom plans a rebellion. He knows that David's top advisor, Achitophel, has it in for David. Achitophel's granddaughter was Bathsheba, who David took forcibly. So Achitophel has had it in for David ever since then. He takes him, and he takes a lot of people to... throughout the land of Israel, he has his spies ready to proclaim that Avshalom is king. Yeah?
Did you talk about the topic like 3 days? He still had his advisor?
He was the best advisor there was. He was brilliant.
Why to keep somebody who gives him maybe a wrong advice?
If we have time, we'll get to that. Remind me. Avshalom comes to his father and he says, "I want to go bring a sacrifice in Hebron." And he tells him, "Give me a letter that I need to, please come with me." And David refuses. So he says, "If you won't come, give me a letter that I should take two rabbis with me." And he takes that letter and he shows it to all the heads of the Jewish courts. And each one thinks that he's the only one he's showing him the letter to. And he fools his father, he fools all the heads of the court, and he takes with him 200 heads of court who have no idea that he's been showing the same letter to each one, each pair. And they're all coming with him, and this makes it look like he has backing. And then they blow the horn and they announce, they proclaim that Avshalom is now king. David hears that the Jewish people are siding with Avshalom, and he has to flee from Jerusalem. He's running from Jerusalem and Tzaraas attacks him. Suddenly he's got leprosy. Suddenly the Jewish court, he rules, he is... David HaMelech is in Nidui. He's in halachic ostracism. He has to stay away from everyone. He has to tear his clothing. He has to cover his face like a person who's in mourning. He tears his clothing. And everything, the cards seem stacked against him. He's running from Jerusalem. His own son has turned against him. That's what God had foretold him. "I will arise evil from within your home against you." And so Avshalom has taken that prophecy and fulfilled it. God had prophesied someone would. Anyone could have done this act of evil. Avshalom chose to be the one to do it. So Avshalom is leading a very successful rebellion, and David is on the run. And Ittai Agiti tries to join him with the 600 men. And David tells him, you just came here from your Philistine city of Gath, you and your 600 men Philistines who wanted to join my forces. What are you coming with me? And Ittai says, no, I'm with you. For good or for better, for bad or for good, I'm with you. And whoever's chasing your life is chasing my life. I'm with you. And Ittai is going to be one of David's chief generals when David's going to have to fight Avshalom. And everyone's wailing, and David HaMelech considers serving idols. He says, "If this is going to be a desecration of God's name, if me, who was faithful to God, this happens to, I'm going to serve idols." And then his Rebbe Ira Yairi comes and stops him and says, "Not so fast." And David says, "Why did God do this to me?" And Ira tells him, "Why did you marry that non-Jewish woman?" So David says, "The Torah permits us in war to marry a non-Jewish woman." So he says, "Yes, but the Torah doesn't recommend it, and the Torah foretells us that if you do, then you will have a child like this. You did what the Torah permits, and the Torah says, yeah, it's permissible but not recommended, and this is the outcome." So he turns David back on the right path, and we discussed that every person has ups and downs, even people like David, and every person should have a Rebbe that could help him get back on track. David HaMelech tries to ask God to help him which way he should go, and the high priest gets no answer from God. And then they try switching high priests, and at that point we have a changing of the guard, as we discussed. So we have from Evyosar the Kohen, it switches to Tzadok. We have a switching of families. Now the high priestess is going to be in Tzadok's family, and we discussed that this is the curse that the house of Eli had gotten years ago. Now it came true. And David asks God which way to go, and through Tzadok he gets an answer, and he's told that he will ultimately make it back. David tells Tzadok and Evyosar, go back to the city. The Aaron isn't going to go to exile with me. If God wants me, he'll bring me back and I'll merit to see his honor. And if not, then he'll do what he sees fit. And he tells them, your two sons, Achimatz and Yehonasan, I'm waiting at the outskirts in the desert. Send word with them what's happening. And Hushai Arki wants to join David, and David tells Hushai, you stay and you undo Achitophel's advice. And David sends up a word of prayer, God, undo Achitophel's advice. When Avshalom comes to the city of Jerusalem, so Achitophel tells him, if you want this rebellion to succeed, people have to know that you won't make up with your father. So take your father's 10 pilagshim, set up a tent on the rooftop, and take them in there, and everyone will know that you can never make up with your father, because if you do, he'll kill you for what you did. And Avshalom listens to Achitophel's advice, and we discussed that Achitophel might have been thinking that he'll have Avshalom kill David, and then he'll kill Avshalom for what he just did. There are different understandings as to what Achitophel was thinking in giving this advice. But Achitophel's advice is considered second to asking God. It was as though one would ask God by asking Achitophel. He gave great advice. And Achitophel tells Achitophel tells Avshalom, let me take 1,000 men tonight. I'll catch your father. I'll kill him. And then you'll have the rebellion will be a success. And Hushai comes and he says, no, this time it's not such good advice. Hushai is really David's spy. And he says, no, if we go tonight, I'm sure your father isn't lying, waiting for you to attack. He and his men are like a bear that just lost their child. If you try to attack them now, they're bitter. They'll wipe you out. And anyone who thought to join you will hear that you lost your first battle. They'll reconsider and you won't ever be able to put together a good army. If you want to take over David, what you have to do is amass a great army and then go forward and take him. And really, Hushai's advice isn't good advice, but he has to save David. David is standing out there waiting to hear word. And he sends word with Avyosar and Tzadok, son, Yonasan and Achimatz, tell David that this is what I advised and this is what Achitophel advised, and I hope they'll listen to me. And as the two children are running to tell David word, someone sees them leaving the city. They send word to Avshalom. Avshalom sends men who chase them. They go down into a well and they hide there. The woman covers the well, makes believe it's like a table. They hide there until the people pass. They come and tell David, and David spends the whole night running, and Hushai really saved David's life. We discussed that Tziva, the servant of Mephibosheth, had come with a lot of food, and David asked him, where is your master? And Tziva said, my master is hoping that in the war between you and Avshalom, ultimately he'll get the throne back. He is from the offsprings of Saul of Shaul. And David says, I hereby give you everything that your master owns. David believes Lashon Hara that Tziva, the servant, tells him. When Achitophel sees that his advice isn't taken, that he wasn't given 12,000 men to go and chase after David, so Achitophel goes home, commits suicide. He gives his last will and testament to his people, to his family, and he commits suicide. He hangs himself. And Achitophel does not have a portion in the world to come. As David is leaving the city, one of Shaul's offsprings, what's his name? Doiga, no. Shimi ben Gera comes out and he's throwing stones at David and he curses him and he says, God paid you back for all the bad that you did to Shaul and all the blood that you spilled. And David's nephews want to kill him, and David says, no, don't kill him. If he's cursing me, then for sure God sent him to curse me. Otherwise, a great man like him wouldn't be cursing me. And we're going to pick up, we're going to finish our review next week. So we reviewed about 8 or 10 chapters now. And next week, we'll finish the review and move forward, Bezalel Hashem.